Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back, Prospects to Pros on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Dane Brugler, as always, with Lance Zierlein. The Super Bowl is over. We made it through the season. Now we can fully turn the page to the offseason and the NFL draft. And, you know, what better way to do that than with a mock draft? So mock draft 3.0, now up on the Athletic. And for this version, I projected six intriguing trades that would really shake up the first round. So Lance and I are going to go through that a little bit. But first, you know, a few draft notes. Trevor Lawrence announced that he'll be working out for teams this week, not at the Clemson Pro Day. He has a left shoulder issue that needs cleaned up. It's going to be aired on ESPN2 if people want to check that out on Friday. So, Lance, two things. Non-throwing shoulder, so I'm guessing no real concerns there. Correct me if you have a different opinion there. But then also the pro day. Anything you're looking for from Lawrence during his throwing session?
No, I don't. You know, it's interesting. I went and looked at the the data. I like to pair the data with the tape. And one of the things that I found interesting was that he really struggled under pressure this year. When he was rushed and pressured, his completion percentage, he and Justin Fields both were way, way lower. And I think, you know, the problem for Lawrence is it was way lower than what it was last year. So, obviously, the offensive line was not as good this year as last year. But right. That's something you can't simulate in a pro day. So, really, I guess what I want to see is I just want to have my opinion confirmed, which would be that he's going to make the standard throws with good accuracy. The ball comes out. I mean, there's really nothing that he can do that's going to change my opinion. I've got a very high grade on him. He has good mechanics. The ball comes out with good zip, tight spiral. He is able to throw with good placement and good accuracy. As long as he does those same things on air, which I don't know why there'd be any reason that he wouldn't. I don't. To me, this is just all about. I don't mean this as a dig. This is just kind of peacocking, where he's just showing everybody just a little reminder here that this is what elite physical traits and elite potential and passing potential looks like. And if you were to stack him at a combine with Fields, Wilson, Lance, Mac Jones, Trask, like they wouldn't like it too much, I don't think, because of the way he looks, the way he throws, it would be very impressive. And you know, I don't know that it's that much different, frankly, from a physical standpoint than Justin Herbert. Herbert was impressive at the Senior Bowl. He was impressive at the combine. Some people, when I've talked about who's a comp, you know, I asked that question, Dane, who's a good comp,
right?
Because I don't think there is a true body type, playing style comp. Like, it's very hard to find. There is really no physical comp other than Justin Herbert. But then the playing styles are a little bit different.
Right. Yeah, in terms of size, in terms of the arm, the athleticism. Yeah, Justin Herbert's really the closest thing to Trevor Lawrence's style of passer, just from, you know, body type and, you know, a lot of the traits. Joe Burrow was your highest ranked quarterback last year. Who has a higher grade between Burrow and Lawrence as prospects for you?
Lawrence.
By a significant margin or?
Yeah, pretty significant. Well, yeah. So it's relative. My grades, Trevor, when I look at Joe Burrow, I had Joe Burrow over a 7.0, which is Pro Bowl talent, day one starter. It's a good grade. Anything over 7 means we're dealing with some real dudes. It's not easy to get over a 7. So I had Joe Burrow. I gave him a 7.07, and the guys I had ahead of him were Derek Brown, Okuda and Chase Young. Not feeling too good about that Okuda right now, but whatever. We'll wait and see how it plays out. This year, but the way it jumps, it goes from – you can have – I've got a 7 – it goes from a 7-1 to a 7-0, and then the next step up is 7-5 to a 7-3. So I bumped Trevor Lawrence up to the next level, which is a 7-4-0. But I also had Joe Burrow with a higher grade than Ja'Marr Chase, for example. But, you know, about the same as a Pat Surtain. I'm a big fan there. If I had it to do all over, I'd probably bump Joe Burrow up just a little bit. But the big difference to me is, from a football IQ standpoint, Joe Burrow is almost untouchable in terms of the season. Now, it's one season. But that one season, his reads, his accuracy, his placement – just phenomenal.
Special.
But I come from the school of rare traits. You know, I learned a lot under Chris Ballard and some of the other evaluators in the league who I'm a believer in rare traits can create rare talent. And when it comes to speed, size, arm ability, and Trevor's he's a pretty accurate passer too. I just think those rare traits give him the upper hand. And that's why I came in with Lawrence, a full grade. Like, his goes to immediate high impact starter who should emerge as a year one Pro Bowler with the ability to become one of the premier players in the NFL. I don't know about the year one Pro Bowl thing, but I do think that he has a chance to become a premier player in the NFL. But you know what's funny is you could almost make the case that based on year one, Justin Herbert had that kind of year.
Yeah, no question. And obviously, fit matters. You know, we expect Trevor Lawrence to be a Jacksonville Jaguar, and we'll see what moves they make this offseason to maybe get a little bit more help around him on offense. And I agree with most of what you said about Lawrence. I think the offensive line was much lower this year, and that affected him. He played rushed a lot. Where, you know, everything he does is quick, which is what I love about Lawrence. His eyes, his feet, his delivery, his reads, everything's quick. But sometimes it was too quick because he knew that rush was coming. And so he would be, you know, overly urgent at times. And I think it's more of a young quarterback learning more so than a, you know, fatal flaw. I think it's something that he can adapt and get better. But I agree with you. The traits are just, when you talk about the size, the athleticism, the arm talent, and, you know, also he's not on Joe Burrow's level in terms of above the neck, but he still processes things pretty quickly. You know, he doesn't look like he's overthinking out there. And then, of course, the intangibles, you include those. I mean, it seems like it's in terms of a talent, he's as good as it gets. Now, he still needs to put some things together to be a productive NFL quarterback, but I agree with you. I mean, you bet on the amount of traits that he offers every day. So even with the shoulder injury, you know, he's going to be the no-brainer number one pick, and there's probably nothing that, you know, like you were saying, nothing he can really do that's going to severely alter your opinion based off of just the throwing session at his pro day, but it should look good. And I'll be interested to see. I don't think NFL teams are allowed to attend. One of the memos said, you know, the NFL teams are allowed to attend pro days, but no personal workouts. So I don't know how that's going to be, if they're just going to, you know, record it and then make sure all the teams get it. Not that it really matters, because again, we think he's a clear bet to go number one overall to the Jaguars. And really, that let's just use that as the transition into this mock draft. This is the third mock draft. I usually do about 5 or 6 of these. And you know, I know you did your first one last week, Lance, so we could hit on that too a little bit. I wanted to just mix things up, and so I included trades in this one. And look, it's near impossible to project trades in a mock draft, but you know what? There's going to be trades. It's going to happen. And so why not throw out some interesting ideas, see how people respond to them? I think, you know, last year in the last year's first round, there were 11 players that were selected by a team that didn't originally have that pick. So there's going to be some movement, especially with the quarterbacks. There's going to be some movement. There's a good bet. I think the big question will be, where does that start? In this mock draft, Lawrence at 1, no surprise there. And then I have the Jets stay and put it too. I think there's going to be a lot of clamoring for, you know, they can really maximize that value by keeping Darnold and trading back and getting more picks. And I think the opportunity to reset and draft a quarterback at two is just too appealing. Now, that's contingent upon the Jets and, you know, their front office and brain trust, you know, really being sold on a quarterback in this draft. That's a variable we just don't know when talking about that number two pick. But this is really where the draft starts. I did not have a trade at number two. I have been drafting Zach Wilson. Is that, if you were to make a bet right now, but with the Jets are doing a two, what direction are you going, Lance?
It'd be the same. I'd have Zach Wilson, and that's who I put in my mock. You know, he's a talented passer. when you check different boxes, I still think there's a little bit of boom bust to Zach. I'm not as high on this quarterback draft as other people are, but I do recognize the point that when are the Atlanta Falcons, for example, going to draft this high again? And, you know, when you don't have a pick, when you have a pick in 17 to 20 range, you're having to trade up to get these quarterbacks. And so even if you don't love these quarterbacks, I could see how a team would potentially reach or even gamble on the upside because you don't get these opportunities very often. So I still think that you have to be true to how you rank them, how you evaluate the quarterbacks. And so if the Jets don't evaluate any of these quarterbacks as highly capable of leading their franchise, you know, the only advantage you're really getting out of drafting that quarterback is resetting the salary. That's really the only big advantage if you don't truly believe in them. And so if that's the case, you know, I'd rather trade a pick for a veteran and I'd trade the pick for a veteran and more picks is what I'm saying, more future picks. And you would certainly be able to stack the team up with draft picks and further bolster the roster. But if the Jets stay still, the arm talent, I think the growth and improvement from year one to year two, some of the passing schemes and concepts there, I think it's Zach Wilson as well. It's just too early to take a guy like Trey Lance, who has a lot of upside but just doesn't have enough. And then, you know, I think the concern about the Ohio State offense is going to possibly poison some teams. And when I say that, I mean name the quarterback from Ohio State that's been a big-time pro. Name the quarterback under Urban Meyer at Florida State, Tim Tebow, if you want to Florida. Throw Tebow in there if you want to. Even Alex Smith over at Utah was, you know, more of a game manager when he was over at certainly Aaron Rodgers was the better of the two quarterbacks from that 2005 draft. So I think the guy with the arm talent would get the pick here, Zach Wilson. And I have heard that the Carolina Panthers, I think this is interesting that you have this trade because the Dolphins really, if you want a wide receiver, there are three wide receivers that could really help the Dolphins immediately: Waddle, Devontae Smith, and Ja'Marr Chase. Mm-hmm. So when you do that math, I love that you move Carolina here because Carolina does get their hands on a quarterback, and then the Dolphins get what they want, even more draft capital. And they still get a wide receiver that they're going to really like because number seven pick, I mean, you're going to have somebody there that you really like at seven unless the rest of the draft just really, you know, gets a little nutty.
Right, and so Lance is talking about the trade that I have at number three where the Carolina Panthers, who they have said, we're going to be aggressive this offseason. They were in the Matthew Stafford talks. You know that they're keeping a close eye on Deshaun Watson in Houston. They're looking at every option. Is there someone out there they can go get? Is it best to look towards the draft? If they do end up looking towards the draft, you know, they could sit there at number eight and hope a quarterback falls to them. But there's a better bet that they're going to use some of that draft capital, go up and get their guy. And in this scenario, I'm going to throw it out there that it could be Justin Fields. I think when you look at Fields, I think there's going to be, like you said, there's going to be some concern about the offense and just how ready to play that Justin Fields is. But I think from an intangible standpoint, character standpoint, I don't think there's going to be any concern there. I think Matt Rhule is going to feel very comfortable with Justin Fields as a person, as a leader. And, you know, the talent is there that you can groom the rest, you know. So I think that there's, we could see a situation where in this scenario, Carolina's trading number eight overall, a first rounder next year, and then a third and a fifth up to number three. So in this scenario, they're getting ahead of Atlanta at four. And then you're also getting ahead of Philadelphia at six. Because all of a sudden, the Eagles are another team in this mix for a quarterback with the impending Carson Wentz trade. Now, it's not for sure they're going to take a quarterback in the top 10. You know, they're still hopeful for Jalen Hurts. You don't draft a quarterback in the top, or, you know, in the second round if you don't, you know, have some type of hope for him to, you know, be your guy. And so, you know, Jalen Hurts, they might still believe or still want to give him a chance to be the guy. They might look at building up the roster before, you know, trying to get that quarterback. So the Eagles are a wild card, but you also have several other teams that could be in this mix for a trade up. You look at Washington, you look at the Denver Broncos, you look at the New England Patriots. We don't know what the 49ers are going to do. So there's a lot of intrigue about who's going to trade up and who's going to, you know, it's just an exercise in musical chairs. Who's going to be left without that quarterback? So in this mock draft, the Panthers are aggressive. Like they said, they're going to be go up to number three, get their quarterback with Justin Fields. And we also have to remember too, Matt Rhule and Ryan Day, there's a little bit of overlap when they were both at Temple at the same time as assistant coaches. So they know each other well. You know that, you know, Coach Rhule is going to have, you know, some good intel from Coach Day about Fields. So a little bit of connection there. At number four for the Falcons. Now, we've never had a situation where we've had four quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4. It's never happened before. We've had quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. That happened like 1999. I think that was Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, Akili Smith. So it's happened before, but we've never had quarterbacks go 1 through 4. It's possible it could happen here with Atlanta. They're really a wild card with a new general manager, new head coach. This is an opportunity where they can draft the future. Matt Ryan's going to be the quarterback in 2021. That's going to happen. But you can draft and develop. You know, whether that's a, you know, Trey Lance or whatever. So that's certainly in play here. I went a different direction. I went with Penei Sewell. You know, they still have a window here where they can compete. They still have, you know, their defense needs a lot of upgrades. But on offense, they can still compete. And so you add a talent like Sewell who plug him in at left tackle. You move Jake Matthews inside, whatever. Falcons were looking very, very heavily at the tackle position last year. They were ready to draft a tackle if the right corner wasn't there for them in the mid first round. So, you know, it's now there's a new brain trust there. So, you know, who knows how they're going to be, you know, look at the roster and all that. But I think offensive tackle is certainly in play, especially if they view Sewell as one of the better overall talents in this class.
Well, they hired an offense coordinator. I mean, an offensive line coach named Dwayne Ledford, who is fantastic. He's been at NC State. He's been at Louisville. He is a zone scheme guy. He's an outside zone guy. So what this tells me is when you draft Penei Sewell, it's a fit because what it does is it's the Falcons getting back to the roots of when they went to the Super Bowl was they ran the ball effectively with Coleman and with Foreman. They ran the ball effectively through the outside zone game, and then they play actioned off of it. And, you know, they were really a more diverse offense. They were really a little tougher to figure out for the defense. And this is a pick when you have – whether Sewell bumps inside to guard early on while he learns, you know, NFL pass pro or whether he plays out at left tackle. It's a move that adds a tremendous amount of athleticism and opportunity to your run game. So I like that. Now, with him off the board at Cincinnati at number five, you went with the same guy that I had there, which is Kyle Pitts from Florida. And when you look – I understand the concept that people have that offensive line, but I went and looked at their, you know, they got the 37th pick in the draft. I went and looked at their cap space. They've got money. I went and took a look at the offensive linemen who are in this year's free agent class. You can get Russell Okung, Villanueva. There are guys who you could add via free agency and then add a potentially, in my opinion at least, a generational matchup problem at the tight end position with Kyle Pitts. And what you've done is given Burrow what he loves, which is a target in between the hash marks that is a severe matchup problem. And at LSU, he had it with Justin Jefferson. Now you're giving him a bigger Justin Jefferson.
That's exactly what I was about to say. You know, watching Burrow at LSU, the way he would attack the middle of the field and, you know, out of the slot, just simple crossers, you know, vertical routes from the slot, you know, whatever. He was very comfortable with that read. And you add a guy like Kyle Pitts, who has speed, has size, the athletic ball skills. I mean, it could be something that really pays off if you're able to address the offensive line in free agency. And I think another point here is, if Sewell's off the board, you know, how high do they grade the next best offensive lineman? Talking to teams around the league, not everyone is on board with Rashawn Slater being a top five pick. Not a lot of teams don't even view him as a tackle. They view him as a guard or a center. So even though, you know, I think Rashawn Slater is the second best lineman in this draft, and I like him quite a bit, some teams aren't necessarily as high on him. And so who knows if the Bengals view Rashawn Slater as even an option at this point. I do think that the Bengals will be certainly involved in trade talks, you know, because again, with the Eagles sitting there at six, you know, some of these other teams that we've talked about, this could be another prime area for a trade. And the Bengals would love to get out of there and get more picks and, you know, maybe even get a Kyle Pitts or a Rashawn Slater later on.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Number six, Ja'Marr Chase to the Eagles. I don't have them going quarterback. I'm going to have them build up the roster before they add in that piece. And they're missing a three-level threat. Like a Ja'Marr Chase. They just don't have that on the roster. And, you know, we'll see what Jalen Reagor is able to give to them in year two, you know, after a disappointing rookie year, injured and, you know, didn't really have that impact on the field either. They need a lot of work on that side of the ball. And, you know, it doesn't matter who's at quarterback if they don't have the weapons. So I think Ja'Marr Chase could potentially change that.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned three-level threats, because that's something that we don't always see in the with a lot of wide receivers. And yet the top three wide receivers, I would argue that all three are three-level threats: Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle. And, you know, usually you're not going to see a guy with Jalen Waddle's, you know, height be a three-level threat, but because not only can he blaze past you and separate, he's actually really good at attacking the ball in the air, a lot like Tyreek Hill. Plays way taller than his measured height. So is Jalen Waddle. Jalen is a really tough 50-50 guy down the field. So, I like that for the Eagles. It's got to hurt them a little bit to have to go back-to-back at, you know, wide receiver. I'm sure that's something that's not that they don't love. But at the same time, you know, I gave him Micah Parsons. It's not a popular pick with people. And I know Micah has some, you know, there's going to be some current concerns from a character standpoint. That dude is a really, really good linebacker. He is a really talented player. He has a lot of upside, and he's going to be able to get to a lot of plays. And it's something that the Eagles really need, is to get better against the run and have somebody that can set the tempo on the defensive side. I don't think it's a bad match to put a guy like Micah Parsons there, but I don't, you know, just in full disclosure, I don't think he's going to go at six. But a lot of times the mock drafts, you want to create some contingencies and see what happens. Because I don't know about you, I don't go in with a set game plan of what I'm going to do. I try to approach it like the team every time the pick comes up. So if I throw some curveballs in there, which every draft has, and people seem to forget that. Every draft doesn't look like a mock draft. You know, what do you do? And here, for example, you throw another curveball, another trade at the number seven
pick. Right, and this is where I think this is a prime spot for a trade-up for a quarterback. It's Detroit, we know they're rebuilding. They would love to trade back, pick up that draft capital, and, you know, really start this rebuild. So, could it be the Patriots? Could it be, another team like the Bears? We'll see how that all shakes out. In this scenario, it's the Washington football team going up from 19 to 7. That's going to take a future one and then a third round pick this year to make that move. But they go up and they get Trey Lance. This is an organization that with, you know, Alex Smith, Kyle Allen, you know, even Heinicke in there. Short term, they're okay. You know, they can draft a quarterback like this who's going to need some time in Trey Lance. Only 17 career starts. There's way too much one read and run on his tape. There's a lot. I think he has the talent, both mentally and physically, where he could really grow into a productive NFL quarterback. It's just going to take some time. And, there's obviously a lot of projection involved. So for Washington, this is a chance for them to get the quarterback of the future. And for Detroit, you know, they're able to move back 12 spots and pick up a future one and really be in a position where they can remake this roster. So I think that's a win-win for both sides. And we've got, four quarterbacks off the board in the first seven picks, which is, that does not happen often. And so it would be certainly wild to see it, but I think it's a possibility.
So I'll try to pick up the pace a little bit here, and I want to go through, I want to cue you up on some of these picks. Devontae Smith, for the Dolphins to trade back and then still get Devontae Smith would be amazing, but it's also very possible. The scenario you paint to me is not a wild scenario at all. And I think it is a very potentially possible scenario, maybe flip-flopping some different teams in some different spots with trades. But yeah, I could see a scenario where the Miami Dolphins still get their wide receiver at number eight. And then the Broncos, if you're the Broncos at nine, you get your choice of which corner do you like better. Do you like Farley better or Surtain better? So I'm a Surtain guy. A lot of people are Farley guys, but regardless, in this scenario, and potentially in any scenario, depending on if there's a run on cornerbacks, you could see Denver get their hands on the very first selection. Why'd you go with Caleb Farley in this spot?
I think he's a better fit for, you think of a Fangio defense, a guy that with his size and athleticism, playing man, playing off, I think he's just a better fit for what Fangio wants. I also, I personally do grade Farley a little bit better. I think he's got the athletic traits that I really want at that position, where Surtain, this guy was groomed for the position, to play the position at a high level since he was 5 years old. Having a Pro Bowl dad and, really understanding what it takes to be a pro and how to play the position. He's so sound. He does a great job looking for the football, making plays, consistently stays in phase. The lack of twitch with Surtain does worry me a little bit. He doesn't have that elite speed and he doesn't have that elite twitch. And there are times where, we saw it, against Garrett Wilson in the national title game, his ability to create some separation at the goal line. We've seen it. It's on his tape. And so there's so much about Surtain that I like. Mostly just his the game seems to happen slower for him. Like, he's just very comfortable. He never panics. And he's always seems to be in position, except for when he's facing a twitchy receiver who has a little bit of suddenness to him and can create those little pockets of separation. So I do like Surtain a lot, but I do give Farley the edge, even though he's more of a projection.
Yeah, I got you. And of course, you had number 10 was the Cowboys.
Reuniting Surtain with Diggs. The Cowboys have their two starting corners, so that works. I want to jump ahead here to the next trade I have, and this is where it gets juicy. I don't know what's going to happen here with Sam Darnold. The Jets are in a position where they don't even have to trade him if they don't want. They can keep him on the roster, and, you know, it's a valuable, he's a valuable piece. And, you know, I think unless they get the deal they want, they can hold on to them. In this scenario, they get the deal they want that they're looking for. The 49ers are offering pick number 12 and a future 2, so 2022 second round pick for Sam Darnold and pick number 23 overall. So the jump from 23 overall to 12 is about the equivalent of a second round pick. So basically, the 49ers are trading two twos to jump up in the first round and then also a 2022 second round pick for Sam Darnold. And so if you're the Jets, that's hard to pass up. That is hard to say, yeah, no, we're good. We'll keep the quarterback. They're drafting Zach Wilson at two in this scenario. You are able to pick up a future two plus move up in the draft where you're going to have a chance at a really good player at number 12. I think that's something that they would jump at. And in this scenario, Rashawn Slater's still on the board. Boom, you just upgraded your offensive line. Plug him in at guard from day one, unless they want to, you know, move Fant out of there and you put him at right tackle. Whatever you want to do with Slater, he gives you that flexibility. That offensive line is instantly upgraded for Zach Wilson or whatever veteran they bring in to be the stopgap. I think this would be a home run for the Jets if they're able to make this trade.
Yeah, I would love this pick. You know, to have him with Becton would really, really tighten that offensive lineup very, very quickly. What's curious to me, though, is I want to press you on this a little bit. What does Sam Darnold do for the 49ers?
You know, I think that it just depends on their outlook of Garoppolo. I mean, you know, he's obviously good enough where you can compete with him. You know, they made it to the Super Bowl last year. But first of all, his inability to stay on the field because of injuries, that right there has to give you pause. And then I just don't know if, you know, are you really maximizing the position in that Shanahan offense? I just don't know. And so they're looking at their quarterback options. All reports say that they were in the Stafford mix. And, you know, do they view Darnold as maybe a possible upgrade? You know, kind of taking their shot with a guy that's super talented and I think would be a really good fit with what Kyle Shanahan likes to do. So, they're taking a shot, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But in terms of making a change at the quarterback position, this might be their best option. I don't know that they're going to have a chance to get one of the top four quarterbacks in this draft. And in this scenario, let's say they try to go up and get a Fields, they try to go up and get a Lance, and they're not able to get it done because of other teams outbidding them. Okay, well, what's plan C? Maybe that's a Sam Darnold. So they're sitting there at 12. The Jets already drafted their quarterback. Let's make that move. Let's see what we have in Darnold, who is still only 23 years old, still extremely talented. It's just, you know, maybe some better coaching will bring more out of him.
There's no question. It's a possibility. I think, boy, that would be challenging for me to give up the 12 and to have to throw a second round pick. But I understand the Jets. But if you're going to make that move and you're the 49ers, you know, you're going to have to make a decision on what your quarterback situation is going to look like.
Quick on the 49ers. Yeah. So they moved back, 11 spots in the first round. And in this, we'll just jump ahead real quick. In this scenario, they get Kwity Paye. At number 23. So maybe Kwity Paye is a guy that they were even considering at number 12. They're able to move back 11 spots. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. D Ford, probably not back. You plug in Paye opposite Bosa. They want to upgrade that defensive line. So, you know, it does cost them a little bit, but they still get a quality pass rusher at 23. So in this scenario, I don't think it'll hurt as much, giving up that future two, but they still get a quality pass rusher in the first round. They don't lose that first rounder like they would have if they tried to upgrade the position by maybe trading up or trading for Carson Wentz or whoever else.
Elijah Vera Tucker, 13th for the Chargers, rebuild that offensive line. He's tackle guard. Minnesota with Gregory Rousseau, kind of a Danielle Hunter type of vibe, right, where you got a young, long guy that you project, and it certainly worked out for Hunter. 15 is where Micah Parsons lands. And, you know, if there's a guy who will take a chance on a character guy who's really talented, as long as he feels like his locker room is strong on the defensive side, which I think it will with a lot of guys coming back next year after the COVID stuff, it's Bill Belichick. And Micah Parsons, you know, to me, that's a top six talent, potentially, landing at 15 to the Patriots. That's a value play if Parsons can handle himself on the field and off.
Yeah, and he'd be a great fit, with the way that Belichick will mix up his scheme and the personnel groupings, because Parsons can stay on the field all three downs. He can give you rush value. He can drop in space. He can just do so many different things from different alignments. And so I really like that fit. At number 16, what am I missing on Azeez Ojulari? To me, I think he's the best pass rusher in this class. Just, he's a little bit undersized based off what you want, but he still plays with power. He still plays with twitch off the edge. I'm a big Ojulari fan. I've got him here at 16 to the Cardinals. Hassan Reddick probably not going to be back unless they surprise and use the franchise tag. So Ojulari will give them another pass rusher opposite Chandler Jones. But, you know, I know I have him a little bit higher than I think I see other people. And it just surprises me. I'm very, very high on him. I think he's a really good player now, but I think he's also not even close to his ceiling.
No, he's completely projectable. I've got him as a number 12 player in the draft. And I'm somebody who pushes guys who are projectable. I mean, I've got a guy with zero sacks this year, Jason Owe, at number 18. Mm-hmm. But I also feel very, very strongly that their traits. See, here's my thing with Azeez Ojulari. One thing I've learned over the years is that on the offensive side, on offensive linemen, if you're not functionally strong enough, you can't play in the league. You eventually will get overcome, and at the best, you'll be a backup who can bounce around for a little bit. In the NFL, similarly, one of the things I learned, and Matt Judon was a great case in this, is, you know, Matt Judon, I liked him. He was coming off knee injury, small skull, all that stuff. But power wins in the NFL. Sometime when I first started, I would get too caught up in the bend and the prettiness. Everyone gets caught up in the pretty, the bend and the spin move, and does it look like Von Miller? The fact is, Ravens have always had rushers who, other than Doomerville, who came over, but the Ravens have made a living off of guys who could physically overtake and overcome a tackle. Strong rushers matter a lot. And when you watch Azeez Ojulari, he's got twitch, he's got grown man strength. He looks like an NFL body type and with NFL strength, where he plays an aggressive brand of football that looks familiar. It looks like an NFL edge player. And so to me, it was easy to project him, because I'm like, I've seen this before. With Owe, I got, it's a little more work to get there with Owe, but you love all the twitch. With Azeez Ojulari, they just didn't play him enough at Georgia, he would have had. I'm like, why are they rotating him out? 13 should be in the game all the freaking time. And I'm with you. I think Azeez Ojulari, and I know Daniel Jeremiah, who's a buddy of mine who works in NFL Network. I don't think he's as high on him either. I know he likes him, but I don't know if he's as high. And yeah, he's a little bit tight-hipped, but I'm not worried about that, because I see something that looks very familiar in his game that I see on Sundays, and that is a guy who can impose his power once he gets to an edge.
Yeah, and even when they did rotate him back in, a lot of times he's dropping and they're just not letting him loose, and he still led the SEC in sacks. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a guy that has so much ability plus the potential. I don't know. I think he's the top pass rusher in this draft, in my opinion. And then I've got Kwity Paye and Jason Owe right behind him. So, you know, those three guys are top 25 guys for me. And so I'm glad to hear you've got them similar.
I had him at by the way, I had him at 16 as well. Azeez, I've got him at 16. Okay. Although I could see him as a Patriot.
Sure. Yeah, that would make some sense as well. Okay, so that's the first half of the mock draft. To catch a second half, go on The Athletic, check out the article. I've got a few more trades in here. Steelers moving up. You know, I've got Buffalo, which it was interesting looking up Buffalo. We'll touch this pick real quick.
I love your Buffalo trade up.
Since Brandon Bean took over as general manager, you look at the first two rounds for the Bills, almost every pick is a trade up. It's remarkable. I mean, this is a team with the mentality that we're going to be aggressive to get our guy. We're not going to sit and wait. We're going to get our guy. And I love it. I mean, it's, you know, last year they didn't have a first round pick because they went and got their guy in Stephon Diggs. And how'd that work out? You know, whether it's trading up for Josh Allen, trading up for Edmonds, trading up, you know, consistently to go get their guy. And so they do it in this draft. They're sitting there at the 30th overall pick. They really want to upgrade that number two corner position. After the top two guys with Farley and Surtain, you know, J.C. Horn, maybe that third guy for a lot of teams. Okay, Buffalo, I think, is a great fit there. They move up from 30 to 21, and they're able to get their corner. They're able to make that move, giving up a third and a fifth round pick to go get a guy that's ready to start from day one. You know, they really value physicality. They value production, and Horn brings both of those things. So I really like the trade up for Buffalo there.
Yeah, and it almost feels like you know, it's history haunting him with Stephon Gilmore leaving, and now you add J.C. Horn, a guy with similar build, same school, and similar skill set. You add J.C. Horn, and now you've got a mirror and match corner in White, and then you've got that longer player that they were hoping that an aging Josh Norman would be, but instead you get in a young player, J.C. Horn, so you got matchup. You got the ability to travel with your, you know, travel with different wide receivers with White playing slot, or, you know, White gets matched up on Tyreek Hill, right, from the slot, or he can match up outside. J.C. Horn gets the big boys. J.C. Horn is the guy that can match up. Maybe J.C. Horn is guarding Kyle Pitts at some point. So, yeah, I like this trade-up because it gives you the diversity at the corner position, and it does give you a little, you know, it does harken back to the Stephon Gilmore-type cornerback that they had previously.
Yeah, and for the Colts, they move back to 30 because they, you know, we know they have their eyes on a left tackle, and they get wiped out a little bit, so they move back to 30 to get their left tackle. And I also have Miami trading back into the first round. All that draft capital they received trading back, they actually trade back twice in this first round. So all that draft capital they used to trade back into the first round in this mock. So go on The Athletic, check it out. Let me know what you think. And, you know, I'm sure you'll all just be 100% on board with every single pick, just like every time. So I appreciate it. Thanks, Lance. We'll be back next week. Please rate, review, subscribe. We really do appreciate it. And we'll see you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.